Thank you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football and men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our bowl edition of the Talking Hawks podcast exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. Well, the Iowa Hawkeyes and the Missouri Tigers are both down in Arizona now. They will be playing one another in the 2010 Insight Bowl, which is happening Tuesday night at Sun Devil Stadium in Tempe. Kickoff is at 9 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. out there in the Phoenix area. And the game can be watched on ESPN. You have the Hawkeyes coming into this game at 7-5, and I know, obviously, at the beginning of the season, there were the people that were thinking the worst with this team were thinking, okay, they're not going to do any worse than 8-4. I don't think anyone saw 7-5 coming. Not with a team that was coming off a win in the Orange Bowl a year ago, that was returning the players that it was returning, and that came into the season ranked 9th in the AP poll of the preseason. I mean, coming into this year, Iowa was a top 10 team. And the Hawkeyes finished 7-5. The season began with two pretty decisive victories over Eastern Illinois and Iowa State. The Iowa State game was especially impressive when you look back on it, because Iowa State's touchdown came late in the fourth quarter. Iowa was in complete control of that game from the very beginning. They were in complete control. Then the Hawkeyes made their first trip out to the desert 3 months earlier, out to Arizona, to play a Wildcat team that was ranked 24th in the country at the time, and got behind early. And because of a lot of miscues, you had a block punt in that game that resulted in a touchdown for Arizona. You had a pick six on a play that Stansy threw a good ball, and it just went off McNutt's hand. Marvin McNutt's hand. It was picked up by Arizona's Trevin Wade and taken back for a touchdown. And then after the Hawkeyes did score in the first half of that game, Arizona responded with a kickoff return for a touchdown. And if that wasn't enough with special teams, Iowa finds a way to claw back in the game. Broderick Bentz gets a pick six that ties the game. All Iowa needs is an extra point to take the lead, and chances are the Hawkeyes, at least at that point in time especially, you would have thought that the Hawkeyes would be in complete control the rest of the way out. Instead, the extra point got blocked, the game remained tied, and Arizona's offense responded by going right down the field, scoring a game-winning touchdown. And Iowa suffered its first loss of the season, first of quite a few losses that had uneasy endings for Hawkeye fans out there. Iowa did win its next three games. You had Ball State that came in here for the throwback game. Iowa shut the Cardinals out completely, just overwhelmed them. Then the next week was homecoming. Penn State came in here, inexperienced quarterback, not a whole lot of confidence, and you know, Iowa didn't do a whole lot in that game to look dominant, but it did enough. The Hawkeyes did enough to, you know, win that game by three touchdowns. The score, it wasn't, the game wasn't as, you know, widespread as the final score would indicate. Iowa did get a pick six from Sean Prater late in the game that sealed it, and that's why it was a three touchdown win. That game was all about the defense, if you think back to it. You had the goal line stand, especially, that comes to mind. You had Christian Ballard's play on fourth down that kept Penn State out of the end zone. And really, that, you know, at that point in time, you had to feel good about this Iowa team. You had to feel really good about this Iowa team. Because then the Hawkeyes went into a bye week, went up to Ann Arbor, played a Michigan team that, when one poll was ranked, even after losing to Michigan State. You had Denard Robinson. Everyone was touting him for the Heisman Trophy around that point in time. And Iowa went up there, and at least while Denard Robinson was in the game, the Hawkeyes were just curb-stomping the Wolverines. That game at one point, it was 28-7 going into the fourth quarter. Obviously, Tate Forcier did come into the game for Michigan. The Wolverines found a little bit of success offensively there late in the game, but as I said, it was too little too late. Iowa had a record-setting day that afternoon from wide receiver Darrell Johnson-Koulianos, who I'll touch on a little bit more here later. And then Michael Meyer made a big field goal in that game to seal it for the Hawkeyes. And they were able to get out of the Big House with only their second victory up there. You know, and I lost track of the last time besides 02. I guess since 1990. So, you know, over the last 20 years, Iowa's won up there twice, and that was one of them. So take it for what it's worth. And then I'm going to skip the Wisconsin game here for a second and just touch real quickly on Michigan State coming in, Iowa absolutely dominating the Spartans, because Michigan State came in undefeated, a top-ranked, they were a top-five team nationally. That game changed near the end of the first quarter when you had the interception from Tyler Sash. You lateraled the ball to Micah Hyde for the touchdown. Put Iowa at the time up 17-0, and then the offense was just clicking. And before you knew it, it was 30-0 at halftime. Game was, I mean, the outcome was well decided, you know. And the offense sputtered a little bit in the second half. And part of me feels like that is sort of the beginning of what we ended up seeing in November. But going back to the Wisconsin game now the week before, I feel that was the turning point in this season for both teams, honestly. Not obviously for Wisconsin, it was a huge turning point, because after that game, the Badgers started blowing everybody out that they were playing. But from Iowa's perspective, yes, the Hawkeyes did beat Michigan State by 31 points the following week. But something, there was more than just the game lost after Wisconsin. It wasn't just the game that they lost. It wasn't just the Heartland Trophy that they lost. I feel like there was a swagger with this team that began to fade away at that point. Because you go back to the fourth quarter, it's 27-24. Iowa just took the lead. Scott Tolzien throws an interception to Brett Greenwood. If the Hawkeyes score a touchdown there, the game's over. Wisconsin's not coming back. Badgers defense does its job, holds Iowa to 3. So it's 30-24. The defense forced the 3-and-out. And then came probably the defining play of the season. On fourth down, Wisconsin ran a fake punt. A fake punt that I feel a lot of people saw coming. I was kind of wondering if they were going to do it as well. Because, you know, if you just thought about the game at that point, you had to be thinking, well, why would the Badgers just give the ball right back to the Hawkeyes when they can't stop them? They can't stop the offense. Why would you give them an opportunity to milk the clock with the lead? As it turns out, the punter took the snap, went right up the middle. No one saw him running. He picked up the first down. The Badgers kept the ball, continued to drive down the field. Monty Ball, who came in that game because James White got hurt, ended up scoring the game-winning touchdown. With under a minute left, Wisconsin won the game 31-30. Iowa had a chance to win it late with the field goal opportunity at least, but poor clock management resulted in them not being able to get any sort of field goal or anything of the sort off. And the Badgers left Kinnick Stadium with a victory that day. And it just seemed like, I mean, we all remember Adrian Claiborne after the game, his post-game interview. He was almost in tears. Actually, he was in tears. He had to walk out of the room when we were standing in there interviewing him. To me, it felt like something with this Iowa team faded away that day. Because, yes, they beat Michigan State the following week, and no one's going to dispute that that was a good win. But then you look at the month of November. You go into Indiana. The offense is absolutely struggling to move the ball on this team. Michael Meyer, you take away the last few minutes of that game, Michael Meyer is the only one scoring any points for the Hawkeyes that afternoon. Okay, it was 13-9 Indiana going into the fourth quarter. Now, late in the game, Iowa found its winning ways, found its magic. Ricky Stanzi completed two passes to DJK and then connected with Marvin McNutt for the game-winning 52-yard touchdown reception. The Hoosiers had a chance to win it, though, themselves late and faced a 4th and 10, I believe, from the Iowa 18-yard line. Ben Chappell, Indiana quarterback, found an open guy in the end zone, DeMarlo Belcher. Belcher has his hands on the ball in the end zone. If he comes down with it and maintains possession, that's a Hoosier touchdown, and Iowa's losing that game. As he came to the ground, the ball came out. Iowa survived. Iowa got to 7-2, and things still look pretty good. Even though it was a shaky win, things look good for the Hawkeyes going into Northwestern the following week. Then in that game, you had Iowa holding a 17-7 lead in the fourth quarter. Stansy throws a deep ball, gets intercepted. Northwestern responds with a long touchdown drive, cut the lead to 3. Then the offense fails to do anything with its following possession. However, Ryan Donahue pins the Wildcats back to their own, I believe it was their own 5-yard line. Or is it their own 9? It was inside the 10. Either way, Northwestern's offense went almost the entire length of the field. Dan Persa led them almost the entire length of the field. Hit a wide receiver late to win the game for Northwestern. He got hurt on the play. Or following the play. Something happened to Persa. He tore his Achilles tendon. But just before that happened, the Wildcats scored a touchdown to take the lead. Iowa, again, had a chance to move down the field, get a winning score late. Couldn't do it. And that was Northwestern's 4th win over Iowa in 5 years. Actually, no, 5th win over Iowa in 6 years. I take that back. They had won 4 out of 5 coming in. Northwestern's won 5 out of 6 against Iowa. Then came senior day here in Iowa City. Ohio State came to town. Chances of a Big Ten title for the Hawkeyes are pretty much gone, but weren't completely out. It was maybe, like, at that point in time, a 2% chance. But there was still a chance. Fourth quarter, game's tied at 10. Marcus Coker, who got the start at running back, gives Iowa the lead with a touchdown right after Sean Prater intercepts Terrell Pryor. Iowa's leading 17-10. Buckeyes get a field goal, cut the lead 17-13. Then after Iowa's offense fails to move the ball, the Buckeyes found themselves in a situation when they had the ball facing a 4th and 10. Terrell Pryor picked up the first down with his feet. And as we saw, the Buckeyes found a way to win the game late. I believe it was Boom Heron that scored the game-winning touchdown. And Ohio State left Kinnick Stadium with a 20-17 win over Iowa. And as a result, the Hawkeyes were 7-4 going in to the finale up in Minnesota. Now, keep in mind, Iowa had the same record as Penn State, Michigan, Northwestern at that point in time. That day in Minnesota, Penn State loses to Michigan State, finishes 7-5. Michigan gets crushed by Ohio State in the shoe, finishes 7-5. Northwestern gets curb stomped by Wisconsin, who's winning the Big Ten, finishes 7-5. If Iowa beats Minnesota, finishes 8-4, chances of them going to the Outback Bowl look pretty good. Because outside of Wisconsin, Ohio State, and Michigan State, there's a separation. However, what I don't think the Hawkeyes realized is that the Golden Gophers were coming into the game playing with house money, basically. They had literally nothing, other than the game, they had nothing to lose. They had an interim head coach who knew he wasn't going to be having the job the next day. You had a quarterback that was a 4-year starter playing his final game in the state of Minnesota. Final college game at home. They had a chance to spoil Iowa season, win Floyd Rosedale. for them, this was their Super Bowl for all intents and purposes. Golden Gophers got the ball to start the game, which is a rarity because Iowa usually starts the game with the ball. Because every time Iowa wins a coin toss, the Hawkeyes love to receive. Minnesota elected to receive when it won the coin toss this game. Go right down the field, get a field goal. Then Minnesota called an onside kick, and it worked to perfection. And the Gophers went right down the field, scored a touchdown. So before Iowa even touches the ball for its first offensive play from scrimmage, the Hawkeyes are down 10-0. Now, they do get a big kickoff return for a touchdown in the second quarter from Darrell Johnson-Culianos. And in the fourth quarter, Stansy hit McNutt for a go-ahead touchdown. Iowa was winning 24-20. But once again, Minnesota found a way to move the ball on Iowa's defense late. Scored a touchdown late. Won the game, 27-24. Floyd Rosedale, gone. Up in the Twin Cities. Hawkeyes, just like Penn State, Michigan, and Northwestern, 7-5. Now opening itself up to being leaped by, you know, either Penn State or Michigan, because despite the fact that they beat both of them. Sure enough, decision day comes for the Bulls. The Outback chooses Penn State. Even though Iowa beat Penn State 24-3, Penn State was picked for the Outback Bowl to play Florida. Then came the Gator Bowl. Even though Iowa beat Michigan 38-28 in the Big House, the Gator Bowl elected to take Michigan to face Mississippi State. As a result, the Iowa Hawkeyes find themselves in this game against the Missouri Tigers, a team that's ranked in the top 25, ranked 14th in the AP poll, ranked 12th in the BCS, team that finished 10-2, won a share of the Big 12 North this year, lost the head-to-head tiebreaker at Nebraska, but co-champions in the Big 12 North. Basically, there's no other way to look at this season other than it was a disappointment. And when you look at this game in particular, this Insight Bowl, yes, if Iowa wins, it's a step in the right direction. I don't think it so much salvages this season, because whether you go 8-5 or 7-6 at this point, it's kind of irrelevant. It's not going to make up for the fact that you're still going to have fans out there wondering the woulda, coulda, shoulda with those five losses. This game, you know, I don't want to say it's completely for the future, but we're going to learn a lot more about this team and the direction that it's going to go in after this game, more so than right now. That's my personal opinion. Now, obviously, there were some things that happened off the field since that game in Minnesota and since the announcement came of Iowa playing Missouri in the Insight Bowl. I mentioned Darrell Johnson-Culianos earlier for the game he had against Michigan. Had 10 touchdowns this season. Became Iowa's all-time leading receiver in both receptions and receiving yards. Got arrested on drug charges. For all intents and purposes, dismissed from the team. Not playing in this game against Missouri. His career's over. After that arrest, rumors began to swirl around Iowa City. People are wondering, is he the only one? Or is this just the tip of the iceberg? I'm not personally going to get into any of the rumors that I had heard, because I had heard a lot, like I'm sure a lot of people had. Obviously nothing that I felt comfortable reporting on my site, but I had heard quite a bit. I didn't know what to make of it, just like I'm sure a lot of people didn't know what to make of it. Then came the press conference with Kirk Ferentz and Gary Barta. This came after it was announced that Jewel Hampton was deciding to transfer. This came after he got hurt against Arizona, tore his ACL for the second year in a row. Actually, tore the other ACL. And then Adam Robinson, Ferentz decided not to let him travel with the team down to Arizona for this game. against Missouri. Now, let's keep in mind, he's not ineligible. Adam Robinson was not ruled ineligible. He was just suspended. A little bit different. But there were rumors out there about failed drug tests, about, you know, other players involved with John Sikulianos and everything that happened. And I don't want to get so much into the speculation, but it did lead to the point where there was a press conference where Iowa addressed its drug testing policy. And the one thing that I really took away from that press conference is something that Ferentz brought up at the very beginning. He wanted to make clear that the three things with John Sikulianos, with Robinson, and with Hampton were all, and then if you want to throw Brandon Wager being released from his scholarship, even though he wasn't around at all this season, those four things are all isolated. Okay? There isn't one in relation with the other. That was his main point that he wanted to get across. That's the one thing I kind of took away from it. And as far as we know, you know, we don't know what really was going on behind closed doors. But here's what we do know. The guys that were included on the two deep that was released later that evening, those are the guys that are traveling down to Arizona and in all likelihood are going to get some playing time in this game on Tuesday against the Tigers. Should also be noted that Ferentz held another press conference last Friday. It was him and then the two coordinators, Norm Parker and Ken O'Keefe. Now, Norm, I neglected to mention here, the Hawkeyes were without Norm Parker for most of the season. He, as everyone knows, was dealing with diabetes and ended up having his leg amputated. Well, mainly they were saying it was his foot, but the majority of his leg was amputated. He has a prosthetic in place. He was around for a few games late in the season, but he wasn't there. And you combine that with the injuries that this team had on the defensive side of the ball, and especially at linebacker, a position that there were question marks because you didn't have Pat Anger or A.J. Eads from a year ago. And you can kind of see why there were some struggles on that side of the ball. Now, that's not to say that guys like Jeremiah Hunter and Troy Johnson and Jeff Tarpinian and James Morris and Shane DeBona, it's not to say that any of them, you know, weren't productive. You know, Jeremiah Hunter, he led the team in tackles this year. You know, Tarpinian, aside from the injuries he was dealing with, I left out Tyler Nielsen too. Both of them were dealing with injuries throughout the year. Troy Johnson, say what you want about the guy. He made some big plays against Michigan, primarily. He had the interception late in that game. James Morris, a true freshman, came in the Penn State game after Tarpinian was hurt. Basically became the starting middle linebacker, and barring injury, he's going to be Iowa's starting middle linebacker for the next 3 years. He ended up being fourth on the team in tackles this year, which is impressive considering he was not playing much, if at all, you know, during those four non-conference games. Shane DeBona even got a start. I believe it was against Michigan State he got the start outside. He's another linebacker that we're going to be seeing here playing for the Hawkeyes that has a bright career ahead of him. So there is some reason to be optimistic here in the future with that position. But going back to Norm, you don't have him around. He's not obviously calling the plays. The play calling was split up between the defensive coaches. But his presence, that's the one thing when I think back to last year and the success that Iowa had, that's one thing I remember is after the Orange Bowl, talking to guys like Adrian Claiborne, talking to guys like A.J. Eads and Pat Anger, getting their take on why they were able to have the game that they had in shutting down Georgia Tech's offense. They all to a T said, Norm Parker's the reason we won this game. He had them ready. Obviously, his impact is huge on this team. And then you look at the offense. We mentioned Ken O'Keefe. He talked at this press conference on Friday as well. There's actually a rumor out there after the season about him possibly being linked to the Indiana vacancy after Bill Lynch was fired. That has since been taken by Kevin Wilson, who was the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma. But it's amazing to me to hear people, you know, blame O'Keefe for all the woes that this team has offensively. Because the thing that you got to remember is, yeah, he's doing the play calling, but Kirk Ferentz is the head coach. So everything that is called goes through him first. It's his play. It's his style of play that O'Keefe is working with. So I'm not going to sit here and say you shouldn't have heat on him for what happened with the 7-5 season, but you can't place all the blame on him. I don't think there's any one particular individual, player, or coach that you can place all the blame on for what happened this season. Okay? They know they didn't meet their expectations. I don't think any of them came into this season coming off a BCS Bowl victory thinking, oh yeah, we're going to go 7-5. No one was thinking that. That obviously wasn't what they were working for. And it's going to be interesting, again, to see how this team comes out and looks against Missouri on Tuesday night. And before I get into discussing the Tigers a little bit here, I do want to make note of a couple things. First of all, after the Minnesota loss, the Big Ten announced it's all Big Ten teams. And the first team had three consensus guys between the coaches and media. Adrian Claiborne, Tyler Sash, and Sean Prater were all named first team. That's really impressive. Sean Prater had a great year for a corner. Obviously, yeah, teams were picking on him and Micah Hyde quite a bit. And as a result, you saw both of them get a lot of tackles this season. But Prater came up big with some plays. I mentioned the Penn State game where he had the pick six. That was huge. Against Michigan, after the Michigan State game, yeah, Micah Hyde had the big play in that game. Sean Prater had an interception in that game as well, and he was actually named Big Ten Player of the Week on the defensive side after that game. Prater had a great year. Tyler Sash. It's debatable whether you want to say he had as good a year as he had last year as a sophomore when it seemed like he was picking off everything in sight. But you know what? He did finish, I believe, second or third on the team in tackles this year with 75. Which is, I mean, that's saying a lot. He had a big season. You know, from a statistical standpoint, he had a big season. And I know, obviously, there's a lot of talk out there about, okay, well, what's he going to do after this year? Remains to be seen, but he had a good year. You know, was it as good a year as he had had before? Probably not. And actually, I should clarify, he had 73 tackles, not 75. 73 tackles, 2 interceptions. Maybe for somebody like him that there was a lot of praise coming into the season, maybe those aren't the best numbers. But you know what? For a safety, that's probably not bad. If you base it on the statistics, it's not bad. And Adrian Claiborne. Obviously, the numbers weren't there for him this year, but I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that he was facing some double teams. Maybe even some triple teams at times. I don't want to say that happened. That was the big reason why. Because, you know, there was a little bit of a dip in his play defensively. I don't think anyone can argue that. Not after the way the season ended. But the fact of the matter is, he still had 51 tackles this year. He still was a first-team All-Big Ten defensive end. He's a consensus All-American. He's only the 21st Iowa player in history to be a consensus All-American. He's the first defensive end from Iowa to be a consensus All-American in 19 years. And he's got a bright future ahead of him in the NFL. He really does. Him and Christian Ballard both, I think, have bright futures ahead of them in the NFL. So I wouldn't just go around completely dismissing Adrian Claiborne. especially when you look at this game against Missouri. He's a St. Louis native, as is Marvin McNutt, as is Paul Cheney Jr., as are freshmen like Christian Kirksey and Don Shumpert. These guys are all from St. Louis. I'm sure they all would love nothing more than to beat the team from their state to end this season. And in the case of guys like Claiborne and Paul Cheney Jr., they get a chance to end their careers beating Missouri. So I'm sure they're looking at this as a great opportunity. Now, I mentioned the Missouri Tigers. They're 10-2. Obviously, it's a good season. The Tigers have one of their biggest wins, probably in program history this year. Back in October, they beat Oklahoma when the Sooners were ranked number one in the country. Now, Oklahoma ended up winning the Big 12 this year, so keep that in mind. That's a huge win. That was a huge win for Gary Pinkel and for this and his program, because Oklahoma was the team that kept them from playing in a national championship 3 years ago. Back when Missouri had Chase Daniel and Tony Temple and Chase Kaufman, that team was explosive on offense. But, you know, you look at the Tigers this year, obviously Blaine Gabbert, decent quarterback. He can move the ball with his feet as well as with his arm. He only threw, I believe it was 15 touchdowns and 7 interceptions this year. But kind of like Ricky Stanzi, the guy just wins. You look at the running back situation. They had, I believe, well, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. I think it was Darius Washington that was suspended from the team completely at the beginning of the season. Davion Moore, a high school teammate of Marvin McNutt, comes in, leads the team in rushing. Michael Agnew, he's a tight end. He's an All-American tight end. Even though he didn't win the John Mackey Award, he's an All-American at tight end this year. Led the team in receptions with 83. You look at this Missouri team. Illinois hung with them, but they were able to beat the Fighting Illini. They had to win in the final minute against San Diego State, a San Diego State team that's good, that got to a bowl, won, I believe, 8 games this year, coming into their game tonight against Navy in the Poinsettia Bowl. Okay, Missouri stomped on a Miami of Ohio team that won the MAC. Okay, they went into College Station in Kyle Field and stomped on a Texas A&M team that's in the Cotton Bowl that won 9 games. I mentioned the win over Oklahoma. You know, the one opponent that these two teams have in common, Iowa and Missouri, is Iowa State. Now, I mentioned Iowa beating Iowa State 35-7 here at Kinnick Stadium. Missouri went up to Ames and won 14-0. I say what you want, but it's still a win. The two losses that Missouri had this season, though, kind of intrigue me, because they were back-to-back weeks on the road following that win over Oklahoma. They lost. They went up to Lincoln, lost to Nebraska, who's going to be joining the Big Ten. And then the following week, they went down to Lubbock, Texas, had a letdown against Texas Tech. The Nebraska game, the biggest reason why Nebraska had success against Missouri was because of Roy Helu Jr. rushing for 307 yards, which is saying a lot, because Missouri has one of the top scoring defenses in the country, had the best scoring defense in the Big 12. Nebraska put up 31, and Roy Helu Jr. had 307 yards rushing. What that tells me is that Iowa could have success running the football. Now, obviously, not having Adam Robinson is going to hurt. And maybe the Hawkeyes are going to find themselves relying on Marcus Coker more than they should. But you know what? I feel like if you give Marcus Coker plenty of carries in this game, he has a chance to bust a big run, a couple big runs. And if Iowa has some sort of balance on offense, I feel like the Hawkeyes can move the ball on this defense. Then you look at the game against Texas Tech. That was primarily Texas Tech's defense, which isn't out of this world by any means. But you hold Missouri to 17 points, you're doing something right. Okay? You hold Blaine Gabbert to 95 yards passing and 12 of 30. You're doing something right. When I see those stats, what I'm thinking is, okay, if Iowa can get pressure on Missouri's offense, then they have a chance. That's the key, though. It's going to be decided in the trenches. Mizzou, obviously, is a really good offensive line. Iowa's defensive line is going to have to overpower it because we know the Hawkeyes are not going to blitz as much as I know fans out there want them to. But, you know, if they get pressure on Gabbert, I feel like he can make some mistakes. I also feel like if they don't get any pressure on Blaine Gabbert, that he has the capabilities of absolutely, you know, torching this defense with short 5-6 yard completions to those wideouts and the guys like Michael Agnew. Missouri has a chance to move the ball on this team. But it's all going to come down to how Iowa plays with its fundamentals in terms of how it executes defensively. I don't see this being a game that is going to be a blowout. I feel like the Hawkeyes, you know, Missouri is probably the better team coming in, but I think Iowa can hang with them. I really do. I don't see this being a game that is going to get completely out of hand. And keep in mind, too, with the Hawkeyes, it's been over 3 years since they lost a game by double digits. Been over 3 years. The last time Iowa lost by more than 10 points was back in October of 2007 at Purdue. Since that time, and then you take away the loss to Western Michigan at the end of 07. You just look at the last three seasons alone. This season, last season, 2008. The most Iowa's lost a game by is 7. And that was last year against Northwestern. And I guess this year against Arizona as well. But that's the most they lost by. You look at this season, they lost by 7 to Arizona. They lost by 1 to Wisconsin. They lost by 4 to Northwestern. They lost by 3 to Ohio State. They lost by 3 to Minnesota. That's 18 points. 5 losses by 18 points. You wonder how much of it's mental. I personally think it's a lot. It's a question that I was asking the players after that Minnesota game, and they were saying there's definitely something that's not there mentally this year. It'll be curious to see what happens with this team should it get into a situation where it's late in the game and Missouri's desperate trying to move the ball down the field to get a score to take the lead. What's going to happen? If that does happen, how's the offense going to respond? That's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on here. Now, obviously, you look at Missouri defensively. At that press conference I mentioned that happened on Friday with Ferentz and with Ken O'Keefe and Norm Parker, Ferentz is talking about how their pass rush is prolific. And I mentioned that the Tigers have the 6th best scoring defense in the country. I think teams are going to be able to move the ball. I think Iowa, like I said, though, can move the ball on this defense. I mean, Oklahoma still scored 27 points, even though Missouri won that game. OU managed to score 27 points. Nebraska scored 31 in the game that the Tigers lost to the Cornhuskers. Kansas State scored 28 points on Missouri's defense. It's something to just keep an eye on. All right, now, I will give you my bowl picks here in just a minute for the games that I did not already list on the site last week. So that'll be the 8 Big Ten games, including this Insight Bowl and any other BCS games as well. But before I do, I just want to quickly here plug my coverage of the 2010 Insight Bowl. I'm going to be heading down to Arizona here this weekend, and I'll be providing 3 days' worth of coverage for everyone here on HawkeyeDrive.com. It'll start Sunday morning. The both teams are having the Insight Bowl is having its annual media day. Both teams coming to our hotel to talk to us, and plenty of coverage from that. We're talking to players and coaches. Also, try and get some video from Mizzou's practice that afternoon. I'm not going to be able to get anything with Iowa, unfortunately, but Missouri will have a practice set. I'll be able to get a little bit from that, so I'll make sure to include that as well. Monday, they have two head coaches, Kirk Ferentz, Gary Pinkel, will have their press conferences leading up to the game. We'll have something with that. And then, of course, Tuesday night, we will have complete coverage of the actual game itself between the Hawkeyes and the Tigers from Sun Devil Stadium in Tempe. So, with all that said, I hope you all get a chance to visit the site during the days leading up to the game and after the game. Check out what we have afterwards. And I'll also stress right now, if you are interested in becoming a subscriber to HawkeyeDrive.com, because not all of the content I post is free. I offer a 3-day free trial. It gets you access to everything. I also offer a monthly subscription and a yearly subscription. The monthly subscription is $9.99 a month. The yearly subscription is $89.99 a year. Right now, this is what's helping me provide you all with the opportunity to give you this coverage and to give you news and information that you want pertaining to the Hawkeyes, the Tigers, and this upcoming game. So your support is greatly appreciated. And I want to also just thank everyone that already has subscribed to this to HawkeyeDrive.com. Your support has been tremendous for me here these first few months since we've been operating. And I am internally grateful for the support that you've provided. So with all that said now, let's get to the part that I know a lot of you have been waiting for, which is the bowl picks. I gave you, as I said, on last Friday, I listed all my predictions for the other bowl games going on, not pertaining to the Big Ten or the BCS. Now I'm going to reveal my picks for those games. We'll start with the Texas Bowl, which is Wednesday down in Houston. Illinois plays Baylor. The Illini are 6-6. The Baylor Bears are 7-5. Both teams are coming in on bit of a slide. Baylor's lost its last three games. Illinois has lost 3 out of 4. The one win came over a Northwestern team that was without Dan Persa. Baylor has a really gifted quarterback in Robert Griffin. I give a slight edge to the Bears in this game just because of the whole excitement factor. Baylor hasn't been to a bowl game in 16 years. Illinois, you know, I'm sure the Illini are thrilled to be in a bowl after missing one the last 2 years, but you know, at the end of the day, I also think the coaching, I give the edge to Art Briles against Ron Zook. So I'm going to take Baylor in this game. Ticket City Bowl, which is down in Dallas on New Year's Day. Northwestern plays Texas Tech, the same Texas Tech team that beat Missouri back in November. I look at this game. If Northwestern had Dan Persa, I'd pick the Wildcats to win their first bowl game in, what, over 60 years? I believe 1949 Rose Bowl is the last time Northwestern won a bowl. I'd pick Northwestern to end that streak if Persa was available. He's not. I'm going to take Texas Tech. The Outback Bowl, New Year's Day, down in Tampa. Game Iowa could have gone to if they'd beat Minnesota. Features Penn State against Florida. Ironically, it's Florida with the coach that's retiring after this game. A lot of people would have looked at this, and if you had said one coach was coaching his final game, I'm sure almost everyone would have said Joe Paterno. It's Urban Meyer. Will Muschamp's going to be taking over this Florida program next year. Urban Meyer is coaching his final game as a Gators coach after 6 years. I think that's going to be enough to give Florida an emotional edge, and I also think the Gators have the talent to handle a team like Penn State. So I'm going to pick Florida to win this game and send Urban Meyer out on a high note. Capital One Bowl down in Orlando. Michigan State, the team that got snubbed by the BCS in the Big Ten. They go 11-1. That one loss is to Iowa. Facing Alabama, the defending national champion. Crimson Tide, 9-3. Honestly, I like Sparty in this game. You look at Alabama, the Crimson Tide had higher aspirations than this. They're defending national champions. They had a Heisman Trophy winning running back coming back to their team this year. They had Julio Jones, one of the best wide receivers in the country. You had Greg McElroy, a quarterback who hadn't lost a game since junior high. Alabama lost three games this year in the SEC. Absolute choke job last time out against Auburn. Had a 24-0 lead at home against Auburn. Let the Tigers come back and beat them. And then you also factor in Michigan State. Nick Saban used to be the head coach at Michigan State. One of his assistants was Mark D'Antonio. In this game, I'm not going to sit here and say that Mark D'Antonio is a better coach than Nick Saban, because obviously Saban has a track record. He has two national championships to his name. I think it would be absolutely ludicrous for anyone to throw out there that D'Antonio is a better coach than Saban. But with that said, I think the experience that D'Antonio had being on Saban's staff is going to help him, and it's going to help this team prepare for Alabama, because he's going to probably know a few of Saban's tendencies in certain situations. And I feel like Michigan State has enough talent in place to pull an upset. And that's why I'm going to pick Sparty to win this game. You look at the Gator Bowl over in Jacksonville. This is another game that could have taken Iowa, chose not to. Instead, it has Michigan. 7-5 Wolverines taking on Mississippi State, ranked 21st in the country. This is a game I honestly feel like if Tate Forcier was Michigan's quarterback, the Wolverines would have a better chance of winning. Because Mississippi State is not a bad team. You look at the four teams that Mississippi State went 8-4. Their four losses, granted, were all in the SEC, and they were all in their division. But when you're in the same division as Auburn, Arkansas, LSU, and Alabama, you're in the same division with those four teams. You had to play all four of them. If those are your only losses, you're not that bad. Okay, this team went into the swamp and beat Florida, too. I look at Michigan. The reason why I say I feel Michigan would have a better chance if Tate Forcier as a quarterback is because if you look at Mississippi State, the game they lost to Auburn. Auburn is Cam Newton. Cam Newton won the Heisman Trophy. One of the most gifted athletes there is in college football right now, if not the most gifted athlete in college football right now. Auburn only scored 17 points against that Bulldog defense. I honestly feel, then you look at a team like Arkansas that has Ryan Mallett at quarterback. The Razorbacks put up 38. I honestly feel like if you had a quarterback that is actually sitting there in the pocket and can find guys downfield like a Tate Forcier, I think your chances of beating this team, this Mississippi State team, are better. If you're relying on your quarterback to pick up a lot of your running yards, though, like Michigan's going to be with Denard Robinson, I don't know if that's going to be enough to beat this team. That's why I like Mississippi State. But, you know, it remains to be seen how much Denard plays, how much Tate plays. If Tate, the more Tate Forcier plays, the better I think Michigan's chances are of winning. But right now, I'm going to assume that Denard is the starter, and he's going to play the majority of the game. So I'm going to take Mississippi State. Now we have the BCS games. We'll start with the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl, features Wisconsin. 11-1, going up against an undefeated TCU team. TCU's in this game because of a BCS rule that was in place this year. And because TCU's in this game, it's only this year that it's in place. The Horned Frogs have the top defense in the country, statistically. Wisconsin has one of the best offenses in the country. I mean, you look at the Badgers, two of their last three games, they scored 83 against Indiana and 70 against Northwestern. Put that in perspective, Iowa scored 18 on Indiana and 17 on Northwestern. The Badgers have a three-headed monster at running back with John Clay, James White, Monty Ball. The Badgers have Gabe Kareemi, left tackle, Outland Trophy winner. They have Scott Tolzien, one of the most efficient quarterbacks there is in the country this year. They have J.J. Watt, one of probably the most underrated defensive end in the Big Ten. I think Wisconsin's offense, and I left out Lance Kendricks too. Lance Kendricks, one of the top tight ends in the country. Wisconsin has the offense to move the ball on this TCU defense, I feel. I don't think TCU's gone up against an offensive line as gigantic as Wisconsin's. You know, at the beginning of the season, when I wrote the season previews on the Big Ten teams, I mentioned specifically the heights and weights of these Badger offensive linemen. They average out to about 6'6", you know, 318 pounds. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous just how big these guys are. That's on average. I like Wisconsin in this game. Fiesta Bowl. UConn won the Big East with an 8-4 record. Playing Oklahoma, won the Big 12. I like the Sooners in this game. I had the Sooners playing in the national championship at the beginning of the year. They obviously aren't there, but there's enough talent on that team that they should be able to win this game. Although it should be noted that the Sooners have lost their last, I believe, 5 or 6. I think it's their last 5 BCS games, 3 of which were national championships. And then, of course, the other 2 being the 2 Fiesta Bowls they lost recently to West Virginia and Boise State. It should also be pointed out that this matchup has an interesting coaching dynamic. You have Randy Edsall at UConn, Bob Stoops at Oklahoma. They both started at those respective programs at the beginning of the 1999 season. They're one of 3 head coach, or 2 of 3 head coaches that began their current tenures, coaching tenures, that season that are still coaching today. The 3rd happens to be Kirk Ferentz. Take that for what it's worth. But, yeah, in the grand scheme of things, I like Oklahoma to win. You have the Orange Bowl. This is a game Iowa was in last year and won. Features Stanford. Went 11-1 this year. The one loss is to Oregon. And they have one of the best quarterbacks in the country, Andrew Luck, a guy I think is going to be the number one pick in the draft next year if he goes out. Virginia Tech, after starting 0-2, they lost that first game to Boise State in a heartbreaking fashion. Then they inexplicably lost to James Madison at home. Then Frank Beamer's boys go out and win 11 straight, and they win the ACC. The Hokies have an outstanding quarterback themselves in Tyrod Taylor. I actually think this game is going to be very fun to watch, mainly because of Luck and Taylor. I give a slight edge to Luck and a slight edge to Stanford. I think Jim Harbaugh, I mean, there's a reason he's as big a commodity as there is right now in the coaching world. And it's because of the success that he's had at Stanford. He took a program that 3 years ago, they beat USC. They were a 40-point underdog in that game. Now, they're in a BCS bowl in 3 years. They've had a Heisman runner-up 2 years in a row. This year at Luck, last year it was Toby Gerhard. I give a slight edge to Stanford in this game, but I think it's going to be a fun one to watch. The Sugar Bowl, Ohio State, a co-champion 11-1, playing an Arkansas team that got in as an at-large, finishing 10-2. Mainly because they beat LSU at the beginning of the year. I look at this game. If Greg Childs, the Arkansas wide receiver, if he wasn't hurt, if he didn't have a torn ACL, I'd pick the Razorbacks. Not having him, I feel, is going to hurt this team. Because if he was out there, he would absolutely be abusing Chemedy Chekwa the way Marvin McNutt was when Iowa played Ohio State. Not having him, though, I mean, Ryan Mallett will still be able to move the ball effectively. I just don't know how much. And the Buckeyes, listen, the pressure's on them to win this game because they have never beaten an SEC opponent in a bowl game of any type, BCS or non-BCS. And they didn't win the Big Ten this year. I mean, they won a share of the Big Ten. But the one big game that the Buckeyes played this season was at Wisconsin, and they got beat pretty soundly by the Badgers up in Madison. Ken Terrell Pryor, who is going to play in this game. Obviously, there was a report today that he and a few other Buckeyes are going to be suspended for the first few games of next season because of something regarding tattoos and whatnot and autographs. He is going to play in this game. Can he step up? I think Ohio State's offense can move the ball on Arkansas's defense. I think that's going to be the difference. I give the Buckeyes a slight edge in this game. And I think Ohio State will finally beat an SEC opponent. more picks here for you. First, the BCS National Championship game down in Glendale, Arizona on January 10th. Number one, Auburn. Number two, Oregon. Both undefeated. Both deserving of playing in this game. And before I dive into the matchup, I just want to make the comment that I feel that this game is going to be on par with that 06 Rose Bowl with Texas and USC, that 03 Fiesta Bowl with Ohio State, Miami. I think it's going to be that fun, that entertaining a game. Back and forth, down to the final possession. Oregon has a great running back in LaMichael James, and the offense, Chip Kelly, what he's done to that team is incredible. What he's done with that program is incredible. He's taking it to the next level. You look at Auburn, Cam Newton, I mean, he won the Heisman Trophy. He's hands down the best college football player this season. It's not even close. He deserved that trophy. But regardless of whatever comes out, the whole situation with him and his father, Cam Newton, presuming, of course, that he was eligible this season, was the best player in college football. And he clearly deserved the Heisman Trophy. I give a slight edge to Auburn in this game, mainly because of Cam Newton. But also, that defensive line, Nick Fairley, one of the best defensive linemen there is in college football right now. He's a guy that Oregon's going to have to, you know, key in on when they do move the ball. And the Ducks are going to have to show balance. They can't rely solely on LaMichael James. They have the speed to move the ball in the Auburn defense. But they got to show balance. Otherwise, Auburn is going to win comfortably. My prediction for this game, I'm going to say Auburn wins 42-38. I think it's going to be that good a football game. And now I will give you my prediction for the Insight Bowl. Before I give you the score, I just want to say, reiterate, the two things I feel Iowa is going to have to do in order to even have a chance against Missouri, let alone win this game, besides, of course, playing solid special teams. Balance on offense. I understand Marcus Coker is pretty much all you got in the backfield, but he's got to have a big game. You got to give him carries, and if the running game struggles, don't go away from it. If Iowa is one-dimensional on offense, if all the Hawkeyes are doing is throwing the football, and listen, Ricky Stansy had a great season, 25 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. Those are the exact numbers Brad Banks had in 2002. That's the exact touchdown-interception ratio Banks had when Iowa went to the Orange Bowl and was co-Big Ten champs that year, and he was a Heisman runner-up. But if all you're doing is throwing the ball, and keep in mind, you don't have John Sculiano. So, I mean, you do have Marvin McNutt still, who had a great season. You're going to be getting the ball Keenan Davis, Colin Sandeman. Allen Reiser had a really good year as tight end. The offensive line is good. The offensive line has been really productive this year for the most part. But I feel like Iowa's got to get back to the basics, just run the football, keep Missouri's offense on the sidelines, keep your defense on the sidelines. Win the time of possession. You know, win the battles in the trenches. If Iowa can do that, then the Hawkeyes have a good chance of winning this game. I feel it's a must that they got to have balance offensively. And I'm not saying they have to shy away from the passing game. I'm just saying don't shy away from the run either. You know, don't just give up on Coker if he struggles early. Likewise, you look at the defense. I mentioned it before. The Hawkeye defense has to get pressure on Gabbert. You get pressure in his face, I think he can make mistakes, kind of like Kirk Cousins did when Iowa played Michigan State. Excuse me. You do that, I think the Hawkeyes have a chance. If they just sit back and let him look down the field for open guys, he's gonna absolutely tear this defense apart. He's got the receivers. He's got the tight end. The offense is... He's got the running game. He can move the ball with his feet. You got to key in on him. If they can shut down Blaine Gabbert, then they're going to be in good shape. If they struggle to get a pass rush on him, you're going to be seeing a lot of 6-7 yard completions with Micah Hyde and Sean Prater and Tyler Sash and Brett Greenwood leading the team in tackles Tuesday night. Unfortunately for all of you out there, the way I see it is I think it's going to end a lot like some of these games that they lost. I question whether they're going to be able to get a pass rush in this game. And I think it is going to be a situation late where the defense needs to get a stop or the offense needs to move the ball down the field and score. And I've seen nothing this season really to indicate to me that, aside from maybe the Indiana game, which they were fortunate to win, I haven't really seen anything that suggests to me that Iowa can win a close game this season. So I think in the end, when it's all said and done, Missouri, a 10-2 Missouri team, is going to beat the 7-5 Iowa team. I say the Tigers win the game 24-20. I think it's going to be that close. I think it's – and you know what? Maybe the Hawkeyes prove me wrong. Maybe they prove a lot of people wrong. I know I'm not the only one out there that thinks that it could end this way. I don't think the Hawkeyes are going to get blown out by any means. I think this is going to be an entertaining game from start to finish. But until I actually see this team in that situation come through, and not because of somebody dropping a touchdown pass in the end zone, until I actually see that, I don't know if I could pick them, especially when they're playing a team that's 3 games better. So again, I'm picking Missouri 24, Iowa 20. And I would just like to end this edition of the Talking Hawks podcast to, again, remind everybody we have a three-day free trial, as well as a monthly subscription, $9.99 a month and $89.99 a year. They are recurring payments. To HawkeyeDrive.com, I will have coverage from the Insight Bowl, as well as basketball coverage throughout the entire season. Iowa basketball team 7-5 right now, like a football team, but a more entertaining 7-5, I guess, in the eyes of the fans out there. I also just want to take a minute here to thank everybody that I had on the podcast throughout the season, mainly the other beat writers that cover this team on a regular basis like I do, people like Don Doxy, Andrew Logue, Pat Hardy, Scott Docterman, Andy Hamilton, Bob Brooks, we had him on during the bye week, Todd Brommelkamp, Susan Dank, Rob Howe, Tom Kakert, trying to think who are the last three guys here that we had. Scott Miller, my old colleague at the Daily Iowan, Mark Morehouse, and Mike Loss from the Cedar Rapids Gazette. If any of them are listening, I just want to again thank all of them for taking the time to come on as guests throughout the season. It was great having all of them on. They're all really good people that I enjoy working alongside in this profession. And I also want to take this opportunity here to wish all of you that tuned in to our podcast today, I just want to wish you all a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year. If you're going out to the Insight Bowl, if you haven't left yet, have a safe trip out to Arizona. And when you come home, enjoy the game. And we'll be back in 2011. This is Brendan Stiles. Thanks for tuning in.